Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson. I'm Luann Crane here with our host, Dr. James Dobson, as well as co-host Ryan Dobson.
Well, Dad, today is a very unusual broadcast because this represents a very special day in our family.
Mm. It is a special day, Ryan, because on May the 24th, 1911, my father was born. Mm. And this would have been his 100th birthday.
Today.
Mm. And that has great meaning for me personally, but I think for our entire family. Mm. And what we're going to do at some personal risk is go back 34 years to my dad's funeral and hear the comments that I made on that highly emotional, deeply sorrowful day. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in order for people to understand what was going on, I had been speaking the previous Sunday in Chico, California, and I was essentially bringing the Sunday morning message. Mm-hmm. And while I was speaking, my father was attending a birthday party for his sister, mm-hmm. and he held the baby that day. And then they sat down to eat, and they asked my dad to pray, and his last words were a prayer. And then he fell over into my mother and then off and onto the floor and was gone. My cousin jumped up and came to him and began CPR, but they never got another heartbeat for him, and he never said another word. But after 5 minutes of not breathing and without a heartbeat, he smiled, mm-hmm. a broad smile, and he was gone. Oh. And of course, I jumped on the plane. Shirley came from Los Angeles, and we met in Kansas City. And what you're going to hear is what happened on that Tuesday morning when I found it very difficult to speak, but there are things I wanted to say, and we're going to let our listeners hear what took place.
Your comments are deeply intimate, Doctor, and I hope listeners will see past the occasion of this birthday and hear your heart, which is this enormous takeaway value that all of us need to recognize the influence we have as parents and the brevity of life.
And especially for young fathers. Mm. And I hope there will be meaning for the dads who are listening to us today.
Well, let's hear your comments now.
To our friends and our relatives and our loved ones, I'd like to express our appreciation to you to be here today on behalf of my mother and me. We appreciate your coming to honor the man that we love so deeply, the man whose name I share. Some of you are aware that the event that eventually took his life actually began on September the 15th. Shirley and I had gone down to San Antonio, Texas, where I was to speak to the Texas Pediatric Society and had a full day of activities on a Friday. On Thursday night, Dr. Cunningham called, and the phone message said, please call immediately. This is an emergency. We immediately returned the call. It was 11:30 at night. Dr. Cunningham said that my dad had had a very serious myocardial infarction, heart attack, and that the paramedics had just managed to get him to the hospital and had saved his life. And I said, do you think I ought to cancel the activities of the next day and come? And he said, no, your dad is stable in an unstable condition, and I would not recommend that you come yet. Let me stay in touch with you. I went ahead with the activities of the next day, heavy of heart. For what not very many people know, maybe you don't know, is that this man here is not only my dad and my very good friend, but also my partner. Perhaps I should also tell you all that I have agreed, I've even asked for this opportunity to pay this tribute to my dad today, although this is without question the most difficult moment of my life. But as Noble Hathaway said, I don't apologize for the emotion that you feel and see. For it's not an emotion of guilt or remorse or regret. I have not one bitter memory. Nothing I want to take back. No words that I wish I hadn't said. No conflict. Nothing but the emotion of love. And I came back to the hotel with just 45 minutes to grab a bite to eat before I was to speak to 300 doctors at 3 o'clock. I opened the hotel door, and Shirley was there, and she was crying. And I said, "Shirley, what's the matter?" And she said, "Dr. Cunningham would like you to call him again." I immediately placed a call, and he told me that my dad was slipping. In fact, he was not going to live through the night, and that I must get there if I wanted to see him. And that my uncle, Jimmy McGraw, had died in the same hospital the same morning at 10 o'clock. I was overwhelmed with grief. I went ahead and spoke to the doctors because I thought God brought me down there for that purpose, and it gave me an opportunity to witness to them. And then we ran to catch a plane, and Shirley and I wept and cried and prayed all the way to Kansas City on that September day. And when we arrived, my mother was not at the airport, because my dad was still alive. Marge Smith was there, and she had a smile on her face, and she told me that he had rallied, was doing better, and thank the Lord, he gave us 79 more golden days with him. Every day is priceless, and I thank the Lord for that gift. But while I was on that plane, I became a little boy again. As often happens when you're losing a parent. Some of you know what I'm talking about. And I thought of the happiest days of my life, the happiest days of my life. And without question, they occurred between 10 and 13 years of age. When I'd get up in the morning early, 5:30 in the morning, before the sun came up, a wintry morn, put on my hunting boots, my hunting clothes with my dad, go out to the car, no one else was awake, and we'd drive way out someplace in the country, out to the place that I used to call the Big Woods, because the trees looked so big to me out there. We'd lock the car, and we'd slip over a fence and down and follow a little creek back into the woods there, maybe 2 or 3 miles back, and find a little place where a tree had fallen and made a little room, and my dad would situate me under that room, and then he'd go around the bend someplace and get himself situated, and we'd wait there, you see, for the sun to come up and for the forest to wake up and the little squirrels to run back and forth and the birds to call, and they didn't know we were there, and we watched the whole panorama of nature, which he loved, which he taught me to love. And there was something that occurred out there in that forest between my dad and me. It didn't happen anyplace else. There was a closeness and a fellowship and a oneness that made me want to be like that man, that wanted his values for my values and his thoughts as my thoughts. His God as my God. And then as I was riding on that plane, a flood of emotion came over me, and Shirley put her arm around me and said, "What are you thinking?" I said, "I'm thinking of the moment when I come to the point that my dad is now, and my two children, Danae and Ryan, stand at my bedside to say goodbye to me. What will they remember as the happiest moments of their life? What will they recall? Will it be a father who was always running to catch a plane, writing a book, counseling somebody, talking on the telephone, answering mail by the hundreds and hundreds. They're going to remember a father who was a big man? Or will they remember those kind of moments of closeness and fellowship that I had with my dad? Few people know that everything I write was not only read by him, but it's an expression of his views. I drank it in every time we were together. For my dad, you see, even in death, taught me about life and how to live. He was a man of many loves. He loved his God. Oh, how that has already been said today. He loved his God. Everything he said, everything he thought, everything he did, the way he spent his money, the way he spent his time, the way he expressed himself, all was an expression of his love for the Lord. And I can honestly say that I was never one time in his presence in my entire life, but what just being with him brought me closer to God. Not because he warned me, not because he chastised me and pointed his finger at me, but because his love for God came through in everything that he did. It was an expression of his love. He was not a perfect man, and I would not stand here and eulogize him in a way that would embarrass him if he was here. He had a generous assortment of flaws, even as I and perhaps you. But he loved his God. The last thing I said to him, the last conversation I had with him, occurred on the Monday before he died on Sunday. And I called him from Los Angeles at 11:27. And I said, Dad, and my mother was on the phone too, I have a very important decision to make this afternoon that's going to influence the next 10 years in my professional life. But I have an appointment at 11:30. That's 3 minutes away. I can't talk to you. I just called to say, pray for me. And you can believe he did. I asked him a year ago what he wanted as an epitaph, just because we were conversing, not because I really expected him to give me an answer. And he said two words. He prayed. And if there are two words that symbolize my dad, those are the two, and they will be on his footstone. He prayed, for he loved his God. My dad loved my mother also with the same kind of intensity that he loved his God. He was out in Los Angeles last year. They came out to see us. What a wonderful time we had. My dad and I went to the Arboretum, which is a park near our home. And we walked back and forth there and talked. And he always had so much to say to me from his readings. And I was taking notes. He reached in his pocket and he took out something that he had. And he said, you might be interested in this. He said, this is what I said to your mother 42 years ago. And he said, I didn't read it to her, but I came home and wrote it down. And this is what I said before we were married. This is formal language, but that's the way my dad taught and thought and wrote. I want you to understand and be fully aware of my feelings considering the marriage covenant which we are about to enter. I have been taught at my mother's knee and in harmony with the Word of God that the marriage vows are inviolable, and by entering into them, I am binding myself absolutely and for life, which ended on Sunday. The idea of estrangement from you through divorce for any reason at all, though God allows one infidelity, will never at any time be allowed to enter into my thinking. I'm not naive in this. On the contrary, I'm fully aware of the possibility, unlikely as it now appears, that mutual incompatibility or other unforeseen circumstances could result in extreme mental suffering. If such becomes the case, I am resolved for my part to accept it as the consequence of the commitment that I'm now making, and to bear it, if necessary, to the end of our lives together. I have loved you dearly as a sweetheart, and I'll continue to love you as my wife. But over and above that love, and apart from it, I love you with a Christian love that demands that I never react in any way toward you that would jeopardize our prospects of entering heaven, which is the supreme objective of both our lives. And I pray that God Himself will make our affection for one another perfect and eternal. And He did that. Isn't that a beautiful statement of commitment? How this country needs fathers and husbands who are committed not to a feeling, but to a determination. I choose to love you and I choose to love my God. And He did both of them. My dad loved me. How I know He loved me. I've known that from my earliest moments of consciousness. He loved me. He told me, though I don't remember it, that in that little first pastorate that you've heard mentioned today, we didn't have enough money for an apartment with two bedrooms in it in the beginning, and my bed was in the bedroom with my parents, and my little bed was pulled up there beside when I was a very small boy, probably three. And he said he would wake up in the middle of the night, and through the darkness he would hear me calling to him. And I'd say, "Daddy, Daddy." And he'd say, "What, Jim?" And I'd say, "Hold my hand." And I would reach across the darkness, and he would grope until he found my little hand and engulf it. And I would immediately be back to sleep. You see, I only wanted to know he was there. I've been reaching for him for 41 years. And I'll still reach for him. But I rather think he's still there. You heard about the wartime experiences. He left my mother and me for that call for evangelism. He needed her so badly. They were so close. But he bought a home in Bethany, Oklahoma, and left her with me because he felt I needed her more. And we would go to the train station to say goodbye to him. And I remember as the sun was going down, putting him on that train and having that lump in my throat and not wanting him to leave because he'd be gone for 4, 5, 6 weeks. And he'd be out there, as Noble said, in a smoky old train station or some bus depot miles from home, so exhausted that he didn't know his name. Because he had the call to spread God's ministry, I thank him for sharing my mother with me during that vital time because he wanted me to have a stable home. He showed that love in so many ways. He loved my wife, Shirley, and he loved our children, Danae and Ryan. You had a great man for a grandfather. He wasn't great because he was president or because he wrote many books or because he'll be remembered in history. He was a great man because of the life he lived and because of his loves and his love for God's world and that little dog Benji who's still waiting for him at home and nervous about where his master is. Now, folks, there's a great deal of emotion and feeling in what I've said. I've left out a lot because it's gone on too long. but how in the world can you express a lifetime love in a word or two? There's no place to end it, because I could talk to you for the next 6 months. Where do we go from here? Do we go out of that door with remorse and grief and disappointment? Not really, because my dad is not in that casket. My dad is alive, and I'd give anything I own or anything I would ever have owned to have been there the moment he was welcomed into the kingdom by Jesus, because he loved him so. I'll tell you this in close. On one of our walks together in the mountains in 1969, shortly after he'd had his first heart attack, and a very bad one, he said that when he was younger and he became a Christian, eternal life for him was not very meaningful because it was so far away. It didn't really seem very real. It was like a beautiful pearl that had incrustations all over it. It didn't shine very brightly. He had it, but it wasn't of much value to him. He said with every illness and every year and every struggle and every problem, it was like the incrustations were falling off. And he said, now eternal life for me shines more beautifully than any pearl that ever existed. And I know my dad is in the presence of the Lord today. I loved him. Probably as much as any son ever loved his dad. He was a beacon for me. And I want to thank God publicly at this moment for giving him to me for 41 years. Because I rather think I can make it now. Thank you all again for being here and for accepting my emotion on this difficult day. And may the Lord bless you.
You've just been listening to a recording of the comments made by my dad, Dr. James Dobson, almost 35 years ago, Dad, at the funeral of my grandfather, who I call Gigi, your dad, Dr. James Dobson Sr., and I don't have any idea how you got through that day. I don't have any idea.
Well, the three of us have been sitting here crying as we listen to it. It all comes back to me. And I just want to say to my dad, who may be listening today, happy birthday, Dad. Give a big hug to my mother. And we're all going to be with you for the rest of eternity. And thank you again for all you did for me and for so many others.
And, Doctor, it's even a great reminder for someone like me, whose parents are still living, to stop and thank them today for the sacrifices they've made for me. And in closing, on behalf of so many families, Doctor, I want to stop and say thank you for modeling this so well for so many people who did not have the kind of dad that you did. And you have become that to so many. So
well, believe me, Luann, I know how blessed I was and am because of the number of people who come up to me and say, I didn't have a relationship with my dad like you did, and you've been a father to me. And I do hope that listening to this recording will motivate moms and dads, but especially dads, to not put other things in front of the relationship your children. Mm-hmm. That is the ultimate priority.
It is, Dad. It's what you modeled for me, and it's what I am desperately trying to model for Lincoln. And it does not escape me that you were 41 at the time you gave this address, and I will be 41 in a month. Mm-hmm. So It just makes us very cognizant of what we're doing here and forces us to be intentional in our relationships.
It sure does, Ryan. I do hope listeners will call us for CD copies of this. As you can tell, this is the kind of message that lives on and on. Our number here at Family Talk, 877-732-6825, 877-732-6825. And because here at Family Talk, we want to help you become a strong mother or father, go to myfamilytalk.com. We have some wonderful parenting resources there by Dr. Dobson, which will help you do just that. That's at myfamilytalk.com, or the number one last time, 877-732-6825. Thanks for tuning in and sharing this very special 100th birthday tribute to Reverend James Dobson, Sr.